The liturgy today gives us an opportunity to reflect on the effects of sin, the result of sin, that's in the first reading, and then we get to reflect on the wonder of how God provides for us sinners, even if we are in a desert without any food. But let's go to this first reading. It's a continuation from yesterday. I wasn't here yesterday morning, so I missed the turning point in the story. All week we have been reading about the wonder of creation, the beauty of creation, the order of creation, how good creation is, and how good the man and the woman and their place in creation. And then in yesterday's reading, something went wrong, the introduction of sin. So that was the story yesterday. Now we continue this, Genesis chapter 3. Now we ponder the results of sin or the consequences of sin. The first consequence, Adam imposes on himself. Actually, Adam and Eve, they impose on themselves. What's the first consequence? They are ashamed, they feel guilty, and they hide from God. So it's not that God started to have to banish them from the garden. They banished themselves from the presence of God. You can see they were already reaping the consequences of the sin that they had sown. He's afraid. God says, where are you? Where are you? Where are you spiritually? Well, I was afraid. I was naked. I hid myself. You can see already, this is not the same condition in which the human family was created. Well, then the whole story about, as God investigates what happens, the man blames the woman blames the serpent, and the serpent certainly is at the root of the problem, although he's a deceiver. He didn't force Adam and Eve to eat the fruit. He just tricked them into it. Anyway, the serpent gets his punishment, the woman gets her punishment, the man gets his punishment. We can see in the punishment that a certain paradox because what the man and the woman were looking for or were tricked into pursuing with the first sin was to have power, to have satisfaction, to have pleasure. It looked like and this is the way sin always is, it looked like a good thing to do. And we learned that no, in fact, it's exactly the opposite. The lie that sin always, the temptation always presents to us is that sin is going to benefit us somehow. It doesn't. It never does. The woman bears the burden of pain in childbearing. So the command of God to the man and the woman was to be fruitful and to multiply and to fill the earth. That was a very good command. It was a very good a hopeful projection toward the future. This is a great thing that's going to happen. Well, now that great end of filling the earth is going to be accompanied by pain and childbearing. And then, on the man's side, he's going to have to till the ground with toil for his bread, toil for food. So the garden, which provided in abundance all the fruits, all the trees and all the plants, were available to the man without much work. Well, now he's going to have to toil for bread. And the man and the woman are now subject to death. The woman's name is Eve. It's the first time she's named because she's the mother of all the living. But it's clear that the first couple now are mother of those who are born into a condition of sin and death. At the very end of the reading, just to point out for an unknown audience, there's the mention of the fiery revolving sword that guards the way to the tree of life. If you know the icon of Our Lady of the Liturgical Life, at the very top of it, there's a fiery sword. And that is a reference to this passage. So that fiery sword and the icon shows us that this is now the new Garden of Eden, the new tree of life, the new fruit, the Eucharist, the new Adam, Jesus, the new Eve, Mary, all being made available to us in this new creation that we see in the icon. Anyway, that's just for Anu and people who ponder the icon. Okay. In the Gospel, we see Jesus, the new Adam, reversing the effects of sin. Now, well, not obvious that he's reversing all the effects, but one of the effects of sin was that food would be gained by toil. Food is gained by hard work from ground that just doesn't cooperate. But in this Gospel, food is a gift from God in great abundance. This is one of the stories of the multiplication of the loaves. They didn't have to sweat to get it. Jesus provided it for them in a miraculous way. I'd like to reflect a little bit on this story of the multiplication of the loaves. You know it well, but actually there's different versions of it. Matthew has two different versions. Mark has two different versions. Luke has one version, John has one version. John's version, of course, has the special detail of the boy who had the loaves. But they're all a little bit different. And the scholars typically say it only happened once, and there were different recountings of it. I don't know why they say that, because there's clearly two different cases, different on numbers of people, some of the details differ. The one that I just read was seven loaves for 4,000 people, and the previous one was five loaves for 5,000 men. So you can see there's some differences, although I don't know how exact the count was, because how can you tell if there's 4,000 or 5,000? But anyway, I'd like to point out that there's a certain development among the apostles in the two passages from Mark. The first account of the multiplication is from Mark chapter 6. This Gospel that I just read is from Mark chapter 8. So in Mark chapter 6, there's a vast crowd. Jesus pities them. That's in both of the stories, deserted place. But in the first case, the disciples go to Jesus and say, "This is a deserted place. It's already late. Dismiss the crowds. Get rid of all these people." In the second account, the one that I just read, the disciples are not the ones who take initiative. Jesus says, "My heart is moved with pity for the crowd. They've been with me 3 days. There's nothing to eat. I don't want them to collapse. They've been a long way off." And so it's not that the disciples say, "Send them away." Jesus says, "I'm like before. My heart is moved with pity for them." And they say, their first response is, "Where can anyone get enough bread to satisfy them here in this deserted place?" Whereas in the first account, they said, Jesus said, "Well, give them something to eat." And they said, "Well, even if we had 200 days' wages worth of food, we couldn't give them hardly anything." And then, so you can see the disciples are a little bit, they've taken a step forward. Rather than taking the position of getting rid of them and calculating how much they have and how much they don't have, they just start with their acknowledgement of their own impossibility. Where can anyone get enough food for this crowd? So they're not as resistant, although they still haven't learned the lesson. And then in the first case, I say there's five loaves, and after the multiplication, they have 12 baskets, and the number of the people is only the men, 5,000 men. In the second account, there's seven loaves. After the multiplication, there's four baskets, and the count of the people is 4,000 people, not just the men. Now, you could interpret those things different ways. Usually, the scholars say that the first case has symbolic connection to the Jewish tradition, because the 12 loaves and the 12 tribes and that sort of thing. And then the seven baskets represent the seven Gentile nations, this sort of thing. But what I like to see is that the disciples, even though they're better off in the second case, they still haven't gotten the message that our security does not come from ourselves and our own efforts and the amount of money that we have. That lesson has to be learned again and again, because the effect of the fall is that we experience getting food by hard work, by sweat, that the promises that were available in the garden are no longer available to us, and that's how we think. That's part of our fallen condition. We bear the burden of having to work in order to eat. Now, that's still true. We still have to work in order to eat, or we have to work in order to participate in the work of God. But we don't have to rely on ourselves, and that's where the sin keeps twisting it. No, we are to rely on God, who is a generous giver. And this is certainly one of the lessons of the multiplication of the loaves. Where did those loaves come from? Well, even if the original five came from a boy, or even if the seven happened to be in the pack of the apostles, those are almost insignificant. They didn't have nothing, but they had an almost insignificant amount, and that was enough for God to multiply as long as they entrusted the loaves into the hands of Jesus. Now, we're in a condition that transcends both the condition of Adam and Eve after the fall and the condition of the apostles in the desert, because not only has Jesus shown us that he will and can multiply loaves, he has made himself the bread of eternal life and has made himself available in abundance throughout the world through the Eucharist. So these miracles of multiplication, as great as they are just foreshadowings of the much greater multiplication that we experience every time we come to Mass. In the form of bread, Jesus gives us his whole self, body and blood, soul and divinity. So we're not in exile from God, even though we still bear a sin condition. We're not cut off from God. We're not left in starvation. We're not in a deserted place. It's not that we don't have access to the garden of new life. We don't have the revolving fiery sword blocking the way to us because of Jesus. Jesus has come and has taken on the whole package of consequences of sin so that we can experience, even while we're still here in this valley of tears, we can experience the fullness of life in the sacraments. So that's what we celebrate. It's a lesson that we can only grasp by faith, because we can't see a big pile of loaves. All we see is a little ciborium with little round wafers. It doesn't look like that much, and it would certainly leave us hungry, so we would think. So we need to look at this the way the Blessed Virgin Mary looks at things, with the eyes of faith. So today's a Saturday, and we honor Mary on Saturdays, and this is a Marian shrine. Well, Mary's the one who tells us, rather than looking at ourselves and our amount of money and our amount of food, the right response is to look to the Lord. You know, Mary's advice is always, do whatever he tells you. Do whatever he tells you. Maybe he will multiply and turn the water into wine. Maybe he will multiply food for you. Maybe he'll show you a way that you just can't even think of, provide in abundance in to you in your poverty. Yes, let's put our trust in the Lord. So that's Mary's advice to us every day. And these scriptures simply remind us that the right way to live is not according to the law of sin, but according to the law of faith, according to the law of the love of God. And God provides for his children because he pities us. He provides for us in abundance.